So if you hit it hard enough, these balls will travel around on the table like forever, and it will cover the space evenly. So this time average is equal to microcanonical average. So that's statistical mechanics. Chaos gives you this reason. All right. So about quantum chaos, I think things are different. It's because now the point in space becomes state in the Hilbert space, and now we have a unitary time evolution of that state. So there are many descriptions about chaos in terms of different quantities. For example, the traditional way to do that is the level statistics about the Hamiltonian. So for a chaotic system, the statistics, the level statistics, meaning that's the statistics of eigenvalues of Hamiltonian, has this property called level repulsion. It means that these levels are very unlikely to be degenerate. However, for integrable systems, what you will usually see that this degeneracy is not a rare event. So in the statistics, so you can see that there are so-called Poisson distribution for integrable system and Wigner-Siemens statistics for random matrix and chaotic system. So there's this conjecture called BGS conjecture by these few people in 1984, the conjecture that this chaos can be classified by random matrices of the same symmetry. So there are many examples that support this signature. These are for statical systems. Recently, there are also other works by Kotzer, and also I think Bernie's is also participated. They use random matrices to calculate late time behavior of the dynamics, which is related to the statistics of the levels. I think it's a two-point function statistics. Okay. So I also wanted to talk about the reason development that a new description emerges to describe chaos. This is so-called butterfly effect that uses so-called out-of-time order correlator. So it is this correlator, and it can be interpreted as the overlap of two wave functions. So one is that you have some initial state apply this V operator, which is a local excitation, and then do the time evolution forward, apply W operator, and do the time evolution backwards to generate a state. But alternatively, you can apply this W operator first and V operator later. So only the only difference is that the sequence of order is different. It looks like a small difference. However, if you calculate the overlap of these two states, you're going to find that in late times, their overlap is getting smaller and smaller. And so that means the order does matter. And this is the butterfly effect because there's this tiny little change of this condition. The initial condition actually changes state in a significant way. So what's interesting is that when you do this out-of-time autocorrelator, you will find that in some large N systems, for example, the representative system is SYK model, that you will find an exponential growth of this it's actually decreasing, but if you do 1 minus the correlator, it's exponential growth, characterized by that exponent. So this looks like the classical case that you have two initially closed points that diverges exponentially. So this is this exponent is called quantum Lyapunov exponent. Also, if you do the thermal correlator, if you just do the thermal average for that correlator, you will find that this exponent actually has a bound, which is 2 pi over beta. So beta here actually plays the role of a length, a time scale, and lambda L has to be less than that under some weak conditions, some analyticity condition about the out-of-time autocorrelator, established by these people. I think Madhusina, Shankar, and Stanford. Yes. So because this condition for this bound is very weak, so we expect this to be universal and could also be seen in other, say, condensed matter systems. So that's one direction we're working on. Okay, so alternatively, you can use the commutator squared. So just compute this commutator squared by taking over a state or some ensemble. So this thing is related to the out-of-time order correlator through this way, because the order thing is it's kind of trivial. So if it's a spin system, if you take these to be single poly sigma matrices, and the square is 1, and you will get 2. So this is basically out-of-time autocorrelator. But this provides you an alternative picture to to understand this, because if you have a W and V operator to be initially separated, because they are not time-like related, so the commutator vanishes initially commutative. However, if W undergoes some time evolution, it will spread and it will gradually develop some non-commutative parts, which is V0. And so the commutator will become larger, and that how fast it grows is characterized by the Lyapunov exponent. Okay. So in this talk, I wanted to talk about two aspects of dynamics of quantum chaos from a complementary perspective. So one is from an operator perspective, that I wanted to study the operator entanglement entropy of this unitary evolution operator, where H is a chaotic Hamiltonian. So this is the work collaborated with David Lewis. So we studied its growth scaling and saturation value, and look at the difference between chaotic model and, say, localized phase, many-body localized phase. And the second perspective is to study the distance between wave functions. So this is a work with Xiao Chen and Chen Keqi. We had the exchange of some ideas. So we want to define a distance that has this exponential growing behavior. And later, we also relate this to the other time order correlator, so this operator spreading picture, and then we identify the exponent we find there to be the Lyapunov exponent. Okay, so let me just get started for the operator entanglement entropy of the evolution operator. Okay, so for a chaotic system, that's Hamiltonian, maybe the Hamiltonian is simple, but the evolution operator in the late time should be very complicated. So the way to see that is usually to do this quench protocol entanglement. Okay, so in this protocol, what you do is to pick up states from some ensemble. It usually has a zero entanglement. Let's say you have a product state, so zero entanglement. And then you do the evolution with this chaotic Hamiltonian. So you do the evolution, and at the end, you do the cut in the middle and calculate the time-dependent entanglement entropy, so which is just the von Neumann entropy of the reduced density matrix. Okay. So in the late time, because the entanglement will not be zero, because the evolution creates entanglement between the two subsystems. And so how this entanglement grows will tell you kind of way about how that evolution operator its complexity and so on. But this is a kind of, so the state here is actually a probe to see the complexity of the operator. It's not essential here. So we wanted to develop a state independent measure about this evolution operator, which is supposed to be chaotic. So let me just talk about this so-called operator entanglement entropy. So for those of you who are familiar with the matrix product state representation of a state, it is graphically represented here. So for a matrix product state, you have those physical indices, those spins, and then you have auxiliary indices contracted in the middle. So if you do a entanglement cut in the middle, so arithmetically you can do a Smith decomposition, and then you end up with a left and right basis, and then you have this Smith eigenvalues, and then you can calculate entanglement entropy. And so if you regard operator as a special state with two sets of physical indices, and then you can also represent that in terms of a matrix product state. We usually call it matrix product operator. And so you can also do a cut in the middle, and there will be Smith eigenvalues. And then you can define entanglement for operators. So the operator actually form a Hilbert space. What you wanted to do is to define an inner product, and we take this inner product, Hilbert-Smith inner product, and then this operator is exactly like a state in operator Hilbert space. Okay, so let me just give you one example, a simple example of operator entanglement. So let's just take spin 1/2 degrees of freedom. There are four local operators on one side, so three polysigmas and an identity. So suppose I have an operator which is that H is equal to identity plus sigma. So it is an operator version of the Bell state, because identity and sigma are operator basis on both sides. So this is exactly a Smith deconvolution of that operator. So it's mapped to this Bell state. And so the entanglement, the operator entanglement of that operator is log 2, okay, in the middle cut. So for a more complicated situation, you might have four operators to be present there. And then you can map this Hamiltonian or this operator to a state like this. Okay, so these colors are mapped to the same color of the state, respectively. So here you have four operators, so the entanglement is doubled. So it's 2 log 2 for the middle cut. Actually, this is the maximum entangled state for the operator. And so 2 log 2 is the maximum value. Okay. So what do we expect for the operator entanglement entropy of this unitary operator? So first of all, this unitary operator is the identity operator at t equals 0. So identity operator, if you do that Smith decomposition, is trivial. So it's identity times identity. So this is a product state for operator. So you have 0 entanglement entropy initially. And as time goes on, this operator becomes more complicated. And for people who are doing numerics, you will see that this operator costs a large computational resources to represent it. So the operator entanglement entropy should be very large at t goes to infinity compared to the system size. So there's some saturation value here. And in the middle, you can expect that there is some growth pattern from 0 to the saturation value. Right. So the question is, what is that growth scaling and what is the saturation value? Okay. So let me just talk about the model we wanted to do. One is the flow-kate spin model. So it's a very simple spin model that you alternately apply two Hamiltonians in a period, one half period for each Hamiltonian. And they are non-commutative, so this generates a very complicated effective Hamiltonian, and it's chaotic. Another model is the random field Heisenberg model. This is usually being used to study many-body localized phase transition. So you have the Heisenberg Hamiltonian plus a disordered Z field. So in this case, the total spin Z direction is conserved. And so there's a conserved quantity SZ and the total Hamiltonian there. Whereas for the flow K case, you don't have any conserved quantity. And because we want to break the time reversal symmetry, we add two fields there, two longitudinal and horizontal fields. And there's no time reversal symmetry. So there's not even discrete symmetry in the flow kate case. So by comparing them, we can see what is the role of this conservation law plays in the development of chaos? And I should also say that because here there is a parameter we can tune, which is the magnitude of the Z field, or the disorder strength. So in one end of the spectrum, you got many-body localized phase. On the other side, you get ergodic phase or thermal phase or chaotic phase, you name it. So there's a transition, so we can see that how this transition is reflected in the operator entanglement entropy. Okay. So before doing the computation, I'd like to provide a picture about thinking about this operator entanglement. So suppose you have this a Bell state whose Hamiltonian identity plus sigma x. So you can map this to the state version. Okay, so it looks like you map the sigma operator to the sigma x acting on that reference state. So the conclusion is that this looks like you map this Hamiltonian to the Hamiltonian acting on the reference state. So you can alternatively think about the state entanglement of that mapped state. So this is for Hamiltonian, which composes of two typeless operators. But this is actually the generic case for the many-body localized Hamiltonian, which composes of many local integrals of motion represented by the stressed spins. Because in this Hamiltonian, there are only identity and sigma x operator. So what we can do is to map this operator to the operator acting on the reference state. So we map this to the state, and then because the Smith decomposition is identical, so we can conclude that the state, the quenched state entanglement entropy is equal to operator entanglement entropy. And so we have the results automatically because people have done that research before. So it's logarithmic growth. It's slow because of localization, but information propagation is still there despite the zero connectivity. So this is the result. And we also verified it numerically. It's logarithmic growth. So you might think, okay, so for MBL case, you only have two types of operator. That's too restrictive. What about the general operator, which has four bases on each side? Well, there's also a mapping, but you need to add an auxiliary spin. Okay. So this is not possible in a single cube space, but if you add some auxiliary spin, you can accommodate the sigma y and sigma z operators. So by doing that mapping, you preserve this SU2 algebra. So this new representation also satisfies the sigma algebra. But if you act on the two side reference state plus plus, you're gonna get your state version of this operator. So for a generic Hamiltonian like this, what you're gonna do is to add an auxiliary spin, and then execute this mapping for each spin. For example, the sigma y is mapped to sigma y times identity, which is this one, and sigma z is mapped to sigma z and sigma x on the fifth column. And then you end up with a new Hamiltonian. And then because of this mapping, this operator entanglement entropy of this unitary operator is going to be the state entanglement entropy when you apply this ladder Hamiltonian to the reference spin. Yeah. So what this tells you is that by this mapping, if you have a chaotic Hamiltonian, after doing this mapping, this Hamiltonian is also chaotic because you cannot cook up, say, conserved quantity after you're doing this extension. So it's still chaotic, and so it's equal to the results of the Quinch study. You should expect that there's a fast growth of operator entanglement. And if the original system, say, is integrable, and by doing this mapping, it is still integrable. So you can expect there's an oscillation of operator entanglement in doing this Quinch. Okay, so let's just look at the results. And this seems to be the case. So flow k spin model, we have a very fast growth, which is almost linear, fitted linearly. And after several steps, it reaches almost maximum, which is a so-called saturation value. We call it page value because Dan Page first studied the average entanglement entropy of a random state in 1993. So it's the maximum value minus 1/2 for the bipartite partition, right? So for the operator entanglement, it's also saturates to the maximum value minus 1/2. All right. So that means this Floquet evolution operator in the long time limit is going to be similar to a random unitary operator. So it's random, and at least that we cannot distinguish it from the measurements of operator entanglement entropy. Very random.
What's the Floquet spin model you did?
It's the model that I was talking about, that you have two two Hamiltonians that you apply this for one half period for each. Yeah. Okay. So we also studied this random field Heisenberg model. And we can see that the growth is not linear. So in this log-log plot, it's linear, so it's a power log growth. By doing a more careful data collapse, we can see that for this intermediate disorder strength, we have this sublinear growth. So we choose this intermediate disorder strength because if the disorder strength is too weak, then it's closer to the Heisenberg model, which is integrable. So we need to be away from MBL and Heisenberg model. So we need to take a weak disorder, but not too weak. Right. So it has a sublinear power law growth, and we also fit the maximum value, well, the saturation value. So if you look at the saturation value, you can see that the deficit is larger than 1/2. It's 0.816 in this model. So that means even at t equals infinity limit, the e to the I h t evolution operator is not a Hall random unitary matrix because of the conservation law. And so because of the conservation law, this Hamiltonian to begin with is a block diagonal in some basis. So if you do if you exponentiate in that block diagonal matrix, it's still a block diagonal matrix. And so it is of course less random than a general random unitary matrix. So the conservation law actually gives you some constraints, which gives you a smaller saturation value, although this model is also non-integrable. Right. We also fit the saturation value for the MBL. It's almost half of the maximum value, because in many body localized system, this operator only has like two choices. So the effective number of degrees of freedom is reduced by two. So it's basically the state result. Okay, so just to summarize the story here, we studied this operator entanglement entropy of unitary operator in chaotic, many-body localized, and flow systems. We get different scalings. So we get the linear growth for the chaotic system, that is the flow cage system, very fast growth, and saturates to the cage value, which is the random pure state, random pure operator value. And also a sublinear power law growth for systems with a conserved quantity, and logarithmic growth for the many-body localized phase. So it looks like that this growth scaling can differentiate with these three systems. Okay, so and that's good. And also the saturation value tells you how complex this operator is going to be eventually. However, there was also a study of the same operator, same quantity at the end of last year by Dubai, during Dubai. So what he did is the operator entanglement entropy for conformal field theory Hamiltonian. So the story is very similar to conformal field theory state entanglement Hamiltonian. State quench calculation. And so the growth rate is also linear, which is proportional to the central charge. So it looks like that this completely integrable model has the same growth pattern as the most chaotic model there. So the growth pattern maybe is not a unique signature for a chaotic system. But I would say that this growth rate or saturation value gives you some sense of the complexity of that operator. Right.
Can you predict the linear rate?
Predict linear rate for what?
For the one that grows linearly, so for instance, the flow case spin.
For flow case spin, I think from the state quench case, we can predict that, because there are previous studies about using flow case Hamiltonian to do a quench, and it's linear growth. It has to be faster than the sublinear. So, and it's also bounded by the speed of light, because it's a local model, and so you pretty much would guess a linear growth. And for the conformal field theory, because there are quasi-particles. Well, I should also say that for conformal field theory Hamiltonian, this operator entanglement entropy can also be mapped to a state entanglement entropy by a different mapping. Because for state entanglement entropy, the interpretation is that this global quench generates quasi-particles everywhere. And so this quasi-particle will travel with the speed of light, and so entanglement grows linearly in one dimension. But in higher dimensions, because the quasi-particle propagates in a spherical symmetric way, so the growth is not linear, it's just intersections with that sphere. Okay. All right, so let me talk about from another perspective, which is trying to do the distance between two trajectories and trying to motivate the concept of quantum Lyapunov exponent. So in the classical example, we've seen that you have two states in the phase space very close together, and then use a strong strike, and then these two, the trajectories in phase space will diverge according to that exponent. So the question is, can we define such a distance in quantum mechanical system for wave functions, and can we find such a Lyapunov exponent? So the setup is this, that we prepare the two initial states, psi 1 and psi 2, almost identical except for one point. At point x, we apply a local perturbation to psi 2. I should say that the local perturbation should be unitary, because if it's not unitary, And then if you normalize the wave function again, that operator may not be a local operator anymore. And so that operator, I will take it to be sigma x, so it's unitary and local. So you prepare these two initial states, and you wanted to define a distance which is small initially, and then starts to develop in the evolution. So there are many candidates we can take. So I think the most obvious one is to take the distance between the norm of the difference of states. So you can take various norms. So if you just think about the second norm, it is just 1 minus maybe the real part of the overlap. So this is not, it turns out that it's not a good choice if you think about it a while, because we want the distance to be small initially. So if you apply a local operator, if you change that state by 1 bit, the overlap could be 0. So that means even a local change can result in a large distance. So that is not a good choice. And second is because that this overlap is time independent. So the distance is it will be a constant. And that does not fit into the picture we had for classical chaos. Another one is the quantum complexity or quantum computational complexity of the unitary evolution operator. I think some people are doing the study here. So the concept is very easy, that you have two states, psi 1, psi 2, and you can always connect them with a unitary evolution operator. So the question is, can you construct that unitary evolution operator with quantum gates you have, with universal computing quantum gates you have, and the requirement is that you want to use as few quantum gates as possible. So the minimum number of quantum gates to simulate that unitary operator defines the quantum complexity. So there are interesting studies about this quantity in the holographic theory community. I think it's Braun, Susskind, and Zhao. So what they propose is that for some theory that has holographic view, there's a so-called action complexity duality. So the complexity change is equal to the change of action in some space-time patch. And so this relates to black hole dynamics. And so for black hole dynamics, of course, black hole stands out to saturate some bond, complexity bond. So that is very interesting on its own right. But I would point out that maybe it's not so easy to compute it in this case. And also in this case, the complexity is a little bit different from the complexity they studied, because that is a complexity for a unitary evolution operator. But the unitary evolution operator that connects one state to the other is not unique. So perhaps you should take another minimization over the unitary operator here. So it's still a little bit different and elusive at this point. All right. So what we do is actually to look at a subsystem. This is also an idea proposed by another paper to study the hydrodynamics of operator spreading this year. So what is the subsystem we look at? Okay, so we just put a cut here to isolate a subsystem, and what the observations are all done in this subsystem. So effectively, we're just looking at the reduced density matrix. So if the excitation is outside this subsystem, then the reduced density matrix initially is identical. So initially, you have zero distance for these two wave functions. However, after the time evolution, this perturbation will spread into subsystem A, and then you will see the disturbance from the density matrix. And so the distance later on will be non-zero. So if you just consider the distance between reduced density matrices, then you will see that it will grow, and because the dynamics of reduced density matrix is not unitary, and so it won't be a constant. So that certainly satisfies our requirements, and so we take a look at it with this flowcade model. Okay, so we again apply this operator alternately on a one time period. Somehow we just remove that sigma y matrix, because now we have this real Hamiltonian, and the computation is more efficient, and because we want to have a larger system. We also study the IC model with transverse and longitudinal fields. It's not so non-integrable, but has conserved energy. So a little modification about this interaction is that we can make this non-local. So we can replace that nearest neighbor interaction with this, whose strength is suppressed by the distance in the power law. There's a reason to study this later, you will see. Also, we will average the distance over random initial state. Right.
Just tell us, so you prepare a random state means random product state?
Or? Oh, no, it's not random, it's random state, random pure state. Like.
Random pure state.
Yes.
And then you...
For one state, you apply that operator.
Outside the...
On the side region, yes.
But then you studied how the distance...
Yes, distance grows.
See. But if I pick a random state, if I look at the subsystem, it's already maximally mixed, so...
Right, yeah. It's already... for that random state, you would say that maybe it's already equilibrated. But because you apply a new disturbance, that disturbance will also spread and it will reach a new equilibrium. And because I think typically for chaos, we wanted to make sure that I think there is a certain degrees of freedom that you can choose points in phase space for classical chaos. You can choose two points in the phase space. And so we want so that Lyapunov exponent should exist for a region of phase space.
Yeah. Not? My question is very simple. If I pick a random pure state and already in the level of a subsystem, it's
right.
like in temperature,
right, yeah.
already features.
Uh-huh.
I wonder.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I would say that the distance will be small.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So this is kind of a finite size effect. But I think later you will see that it looks like this random state average actually gives you an operator statement. So by removing that depressing factor, you're going to get a more appealing operator statement. Okay.
So this distance, is it related to OTOC?
Yeah, it is. I will show you later. Yeah. All right, so this is the data. Of flow cage spin model with local interaction, actually nearest neighbor interaction. So I plotted in a semi-log plot. So one would not conclude there's an exponential growth there because it's bending down. So there's no exponential growth of distance in the flow cage model with local interaction in the range we have explored. So we prepared like 22 sites. And y minus x is the distance from the excitation to the entanglement cut. We wanted this to be as large as possible, such that there's a room to accommodate possible exponential growth. However, we didn't see that. But one thing to notice is that the saturation value, I also plotted here. So the saturation value for various systems looks like that it's equal to the distance of two independent random states. So that the information about the initial state has been completely washed out. And so in the end, it looks like the two independent random states by just looking at the subsystem. Although if you look at the whole system, you can trace back to the initial state. Right? So information has scrambled. Yeah. So here you can also see that there is a butterfly velocity because these lines are shifted, looks like they're shifted by constant amount. If you vary the distance of the excitation to the cut. So I would say there's a butterfly velocity, but we haven't measured because in this flow cage system, these lines are actually helping you to guide the eye. They're not there. We only measure the discrete points. So it's hard to like fix the distance and measure the time are discrete. So it's hard to define the butterfly velocity, but I think it's there. So local interaction, no exponential growth. However, if we turn on non-local interaction with the power law suppression, we can see there is an exponential growth. So the reason is that if you plot this on a log-log plot, the curvature, so you know this, it's bent upwards, so it has positive curvature, and so it's definitely faster than any power law. And if you plot it on a semi-log plot, one would identify this region to be the exponential growth region. Right. And I think it's longer enough compared with the saturation time. So we claim that this is an exponential growing region. So we did the same thing for this icing with transverse and longitudinal fields. This is also true. The behavior is similar, so I didn't show the plots here. Also partly because the data is not completely available. Yeah. Right. So we wanted to provide an understanding about the exponential behavior and also its relation to OTOs as you mentioned. So as I said, because this distance is averaged over random initial state. So what you can expect that it's independent of the initial state. It's rather an operator statement. So the distance, and you can also view that distance to be psi 1 and that other state. That is just the rewriting of psi t, psi 2 of time t. Okay. So the difference is that the other state has an additional time-evolved operator, ox of minus t, because it's backwards Heisenberg evolution. So the focus is on that operator O of t. So if that operator is completely confined in region B, then the resulting reduced density matrices are identical. So the distance is zero. So that means it looks like the component in region B will not contribute to that distance. So we actually did a computation using some quantum information tool. So by doing that average, it looks like a tool design average. So that can be done. And this is the result. So d squared average is going to be some scale factor times the thing in the bracket. So that thing in the bracket is what I said, that is operator that spreads both in A and B. So let me just explain that BI. So BI is the operator basis confined in region B. So it's just the operator that I talked about before. It's a Pauli string in region B. So completely identity operator in region A and complicated in region B. But it's an operator basis. So if you take this trace, so this trace is the inner product of operators, and you subtract it. So all the operators that are confined in B are subtracted. And so the resultant thing is that you have operators that spend in both regions will contribute to the distance. But there's a scale factor, 1 to 1 over the distance there. Right. So if you think about in the operator spreading picture, you will realize that it's related to the coefficients of this operator in terms of the basis in the whole space. So that Hi is the operator basis in the whole Hilbert space, and this operator O, x minus t, can have some expansion, and its coefficients alpha jt is going to be time dependent. So initially this coefficient is localized to one basis, that is the local operator you put in. So it's localized at one point, say this point. But as time goes on, this components, all these components are getting larger. So this alpha j will migrate to longer operators in general. So you can define statistics for these alphas. So I'll call it endpoint distribution. So that is very simple. You just count the number of operators that end at this point y. Okay. By ending at that point, I mean beyond that point, it's identity. So it's the last non-identity operator you have, say at this point. And then you count all the weights, which is alpha j squared, the probability, you sum all of these probabilities, then that is, that's fr st, is the probability of an operator basis that end at this point. Okay, so there are studies about this distribution in the hydrodynamic limit, in the coarse grain limit, by these two groups. So what they did is to study this distribution in a random tensor network. Stack one layer on the other, but interlace the two sides gate by one step on each layer. So in that case, it turns out that the operator dynamics is a Markov process. It's a biased diffusion, and so the wavefront, so the endpoint distribution is a Gaussian, moving Gaussian with increasing width. Okay. So this wave packet is exactly a Gaussian in that model. We don't know the shape in this model, but we can have this picture still because the operator is more likely to grow than to shrink. And if you remember the picture I told you, that only the operator that spans in both A and B will contribute, and that means this operator has to go beyond this point y. And that means you just do integration of that endpoint distribution. It is the area under that wavefront. You can alternatively think about the commutator squared all the time autocorrelated. So as I talked about before, this commutator squared is related to the out of time autocorrelator through that way. It's 2 minus OTOC. And it's so in some larger system, you find the Lyapunov exponent. But here, if you just think about this at t equals 0, you'll get 0 because these two operators are only spatially related. So they commute, so initially 0. But as time goes on, this operator will grow. I will scramble to the whole Hilbert space. So the commutator will become large. And the only thing that contributes to this commutator square is the component that do not commute with the sigma x y, sigma x at position y, you put there. So in this commutator square, I actually put a probe operator at that point, which uses it to be sigma x y, but it doesn't matter because in the chaotic case, we believe that the distribution about operator for all these sigmas and identities are kind of equally likely. So if you have this democratic distribution, then you would conclude that it's also proportional to the area of the wavefront. Maybe a fraction of it, say 1/2, 1/3, but it's proportional to that. So based on this picture, we would conclude that the distance we computed is actually proportional to the commutator square. And so the exact relation, if you trust the computation for that d square formula and the democratic distribution about those operator components, then it's 1 minus 1 divided by the Hilbert space dimension of B. Okay, so we did that collapse for the system we considered. Okay, so this is a d squared for random pure state average. And this is the commutator squared divided by the Hilbert space dimension of B. Okay, so this blue and red line actually almost collapse here. Okay, both of them have an exponential growth. And so we would conclude that these two quantities actually captures the same physics, which is that area of the wavefront. Right. We also try to do the thermal states for thermal states for the flow k case. We just prepare a state, do some evolution for long enough time. It is also infinite temperature, but it's not the random pure state. So the collapse works well in the region we're interested in. So maybe it is also valid for this thermal state. All right. So in this part, I wanted to summarize. So we measure the distance using by looking at the subsystem using Hilbert space distance. So we relate this picture to the area of the operator wavefront. As I explained, that only operator that spans in both regions will contribute, and so it's related to the how fast this operator spreads. So it turns out to be the same thing as the commutator squared, rescaled by the factor of dimension of Hilbert space B. So from this picture, we see that you should have kind of an exponential tail of that operator wavefront to get an exponential growth of distance, right? And if you don't have a non-local interaction, it looks like that the wavefront is localized in a region. If it's a Gaussian, then the area under the wavefront looks like an error function. So that's not the thing you're looking for. But if you turn on the non-local interaction, and then the interaction is propagates to way more neighborhoods than before. And so that kind of simulates the all-to-all interaction of the SYK, and that gives rise to the exponential growth. Okay, so there are many open questions here. So the question is, so in the local interaction model, we do not see that exponential growth. So is it like that region is intrinsically not there, or is it because the system size limit? So we don't have a conclusion yet. Because for the system we considered, we can only do like 24 sites. But that Lyapunov region, maybe it's too small. You cannot find it in such a small system. But it also does not exist in the random tensor network model. But in that model, it looks like the interaction is random enough, but it still does not generate an exponential growth. So another option is that, is it possible that local interaction prohibits the generation of that exponential growth? Well, I would say that's possible. And second is that there is a chaos bond in terms of temperature to pi over beta for finite temperature computation. So this chaos bond, as I said, is pretty general. It only assumes the analyticity of that out-of-time autocorrelator in an imaginary time strip. And then some factorization conditions, which is generally true. So one would expect that this bond can be generalized to those spin systems. However, what we did is an infinite temperature system, so there's no violation here. However, if it's in a finite temperature system, can one find such a bond? Is there any system that saturates this bond as well? So that's also an open question, right? And also the physics that the finite temperature, how does finite temperature effect changes the wavefront? That is another question. Okay, so I would like to end here, and thanks for attending my seminar. Thank you. I would like to take questions.
So you mentioned at some point that your blockade system looks like a 2D sign in some sense. Can you like repeat that? Can you be more specific on that?
You wanted me to repeat the definition of blockade system?
No. So you said that this blockade evolution looks like a 2D sign, or in some sense, or
the blockade system look like 2D sign.
You mentioned
two design. I see.
Yeah, design.
Sorry, it's not a Flocade system. It's the d squared. So So d squared, it's the average of distance between the reduced density matrices. So it has four like precise states there, and so that state is a unitary operator acting on a reference state. So there are four unitary operators there by doing that average. So it looks like a you are taking the second moment of the Hall random matrix, so it looks like a two design. I would just say this is a way to derive this formula. It turns out that it looks like a two design, and you get this nice picture. But maybe one should expect that this is also true. This picture is also true for thermal states where you don't have that two design picture, because our numerics seems to suggest that is the case, at least for the growth region.
But I guess for Fourier system, we repeat the same time evolution.
Right.
So no matter how random the original thing is, there is kind of concern.
Right.
So then I think similar question is random matrix theory for to design of the
right.
We computed it and it as kind of approach to two design, but then it deviates, goes away from
right.
Two design because of, I think, concern.
Right. So I think to resolve the issue, one would like to appeal to, say, a tensor network, a random tensor network with conserved quantities or even the same Hamiltonian there, and then one can see what's the effect of conserved energy, say, to be imposed on the wavefront dynamics.
Great question. In the first part of your talk, you talked about MBL, and you saw this sublinear growth in the attainment.
Logarithmic growth for MBL.
Oh yeah, sorry. W is a half random Heisenberg. There you have sublinear.
If W is one half, then it's sublinear, right?
Yeah.
But
if you look at the whole phase up to the point where you have the transition.
We looked at it. Yes. So the transition is from this power law to logarithmic, because of the system size limit, you can see a smooth transition from this scaling from the other. It's not a sharp transition. So we have no conclusion about whether this is a good way to look at the transition point.
Okay, so
but it's.
Power goes to zero, right?
Yeah. That's right. We expect that the power law to be zero, and we observe that. So it's going so you can do that fitting, and this power law is getting smaller, and at some region, like close to 3.7, which is supposed to be the transition region, it's hard to define that power law anymore.
Yeah.
So it's not a clear evidence of it, but it's suggestive that there's a transition there.
No, then let's take a chance again.